We're very excited and happy to welcome you to Australia and Perth specifically. Michael, can we ask you what we can expect from your concerts?
I'm also extremely happy to have the chance to come back to Australia to play again. The last time was in 2012 when I did a tour and I played at the Adelaide Festival, etc., with Dieter Möbius and Hans Lampe, who will now also be with me on the tour.
Yeah.
And before that, in 2009, with Harmonia, when we played at the All Tomorrow's Parties festivals around the country.
Right.
But yes, what can you expect? That's always a bag of surprises, no, but I think it's not a big secret these days. And in recent years, I've picked up some material from the past, like tracks by Noi, Harmonia, and from my solo catalog, which work well in a live environment. I like to have dynamic concerts. Like, I love to see the crowd move and even dance if possible. Sometimes I even talk to the audience, especially when it's a seated audience. I remember one occasion in London, and they were so happy when I invited them to get up. And then suddenly, before that, they were all sitting quietly, and then they were moving around. And that is part of my plan, my wish.
We heard a band called Noi and a track called Hello Gallo, which was off their first album. And during our interview with Michael Rother, we asked him that in the late 60s and early 70s, there was an enormous surge of creativity in Germany. And we asked him if he could enlighten us as to why this was.
Well, you're very generous with your description of much creativity. I don't want to dim that light. I think looking back over 40, 50 more years, people seem to think that was a huge group of very talented and innovative musicians. If I look back at my history, it wasn't really like that. I mean, how many hours do we have to discuss this question? Your question demands such a broad answer. Maybe I should first look at that. I think the situation in the 60s, it's so difficult to explain to young people how it felt, how the feeling between the two superpowers at each other's throats, with the permanent danger and threat of nuclear destruction and war, which really was the case. I mean, living in Germany, we were at the border to the east, and with Berlin, an island in eastern Germany, which was controlled by the Soviet Union. I mean, politically, militarily. I remember very unpleasant situations. There was a transit corridor which was agreed upon the four military superpowers, but the soldiers of the eastern side they seemed like Nazis. The terror of Germany in the Second World War, I don't know if you want to go into that, but they seem to have survived back then. Maybe it is just a totalitarian regime that always brings up that kind of atmosphere in soldiers and the police force. But on the bigger picture, there was also the rising doubt about the wisdom of the West fighting in Vietnam, for instance. I remember clearly that my friends and I, we discussed the situation many times and were very, very upset, very angry about the war crimes committed by America. And also, I guess, the situation, thinking about Germany's past for teenagers and twins in the 60s was something, okay, we have to overcome this past. We have to try to develop a new identity, cultural identity. We have to forget about all the terrible things that had been done in the name of Germany and the devastation of culture. I mean, this is really a big, big question, but it was, for me, if I come to my person, it was also at some point realizing that although I loved the Anglo-American music, I was I still love Beatles and a lot of the music I grew up with. But I started realizing when I was maybe 18, 17, 18, 19, the end of school time, that it would not be enough for my ambition as a musician, as an individual, to be a copy of my musical heroes like Jimi Hendrix, the Beatles, Kings, Stones, and so on. And I think this feeling of necessity to move towards creating a new identity, your own identity in Germany especially, was shared by many young people. And I guess that's what led to all these bands you mentioned and many, many more around Germany in Munich, Berlin, Hamburg, Cologne, Düsseldorf, etc., etc., to more or less steer away from the paths, the agreed upon paths of Anglo-American music, and depending on their, to be honest, on the creativity and talent, to develop own styles, own ideas. And that's what happened in the late 60s and early 70s. And some of those musicians I was very fortunate to meet. You probably know the story that I didn't even know Kraftwerk when I one day ended up in their studio and started jamming with Ralf Hütter, and suddenly realizing that I was not as alone as I felt, because at that time I looked around, I didn't know anyone who had similar desire to create something Central European with new elements independent of the past. And jamming with Ralf Hütter, it was so easy. We didn't even have to use words to talk about what we were going to do, what we were doing. It was just, yeah, that was the same basic idea about melody, harmony. And so it led to Florian Schneider inviting me to join the band in early 71. And suddenly I was in this circle of like-minded people, like Conny Plank as a sound engineer and gifted producer, and the musicians Klaus Dinger, Florian Schneider, later Hans-Joachim Rödelius and Dieter Möbius. That was the core of a group. That was a group of people whom I saw as my partners in the creation of a new identity, new music. And I took great inspiration from exchanging ideas and working with them. I couldn't imagine my development without those important steps, also in Harmonia with Riderius and Möbius, in Neu with Klaus Dinger. And I was very fortunate. But I think now I nearly jumped over the border of your big question. But
no, no,
the situation really was
fantastic.
so complex. Yeah. It was not so easy.
Right. So you're listening to Woodstock Rock on RTR FM 92.1, and you just heard Neu with After Eight from their third album, Neu 75.
It's a great track.
It is a great track, yeah. And we're in the middle of an interview with Michael Rother, German musician in bands Neu, Harmonia, and solo artist. And we asked him several questions, and one of those was we asked him to expand on the creative sounds and the creative collaborations he was with, and we were asking him, was it something that that happened organically, or was it planned?
The thing with Riderius and especially Möbius, we were not classically trained musicians on a specific instrument, so we started with also with the freedom which classically trained musicians usually do not have, because they learn what is possible, what has been done, what has to be done, the notes that can be connected, the notes that you shouldn't, because it was always the rule never to connect those notes, whatever. The freedom, this is something I preserved for myself. It was always very important. And for musicians like Möbius, who, when he started playing with Cluster, he had absolutely no musical background. And so he was actually working as a cook, I think, at that time in Berlin. And they asked him, there was some art happening. They were supposed to play for 36 hours or something like that, crazy experiments at the time. And he just took drums and he did what he always, and also in later years, did. Möbius, unfortunately, you know, he's no longer with us, but he's on my mind so often, all the time. Vittoria sometimes comes up with sounds and I think, oh, this is Möbius looking around the corner. And that's fascination. And Möbi had, because he was an artistic person, he had this knowledge of when to do the wrong notes. His speciality. He sometimes threw in notes that blew you off course because, but that was Möbi. He was some kind of rebel. He stayed a rebel in a way. Riderius was a very different character. When I drove to their place, the idea actually was Neu needed musicians to put our music on stage. I'd release the first album, and I think the second was also coming out in the UK, and the label wanted to do a tour with us, a UK tour. But Klaus Dinger and I, we were dependent on the multi-track capability of adding more versions of our ideas on top of each other. As a duo, to play live was impossible. We tried that twice and it was a disaster. People didn't like it. We didn't like it. And so I came up with the idea of checking whether Riderius and Möbius were the right musicians for that project. And I took my guitar and drove to that place and jammed with Redelius. And Redelius also saw, in a fascinating way, an endless machine playing strings of notes forever. And that was already a combination, a basis for my contributions on the guitar, which you then hear on the first Harmonia album, for instance. If you look at a track like Watusi.
Yeah. Yep.
By the way, before I forget, do you know that the first Harmonia album will celebrate its 50th anniversary next year?
Yes. And we'll be celebrating it with you.
And there's actually a project going on. Yesterday I received the mastering of an LP with remixes and reworks, and I will check the mastering later today and give some feedback. That's a very nice project. But coming back to Redelius, I fell in love with that possibility. We were just playing. It was a similar, but on a different, in a different musical corner than playing with Ralf Hütter. But that made me, it actually attracted me so much that I thought I have to work with these musicians. And I left Neu and Düsseldorf behind and moved to that place. And we started the project Harmonia.
And that was Dino by, of course, Harmonia. Earlier in our discussion chat with Michael Rother, he made mention of his producer, Connie Plank. And we asked him what a huge influence he had, not only on him, but also many other musicians in Germany at the time.
It's fair to say, and it's I try never to forget to mention and to point out to all fans, also new fans, new people and interviews, that without Connie Plank, I think most of what we did wouldn't have happened, and certainly not in turned out the way it did. Because Connie Plank, he came from the engineering side. He also had some musical ambitions, but he didn't push that to us. He knew that we were we needed a talented engineer and co-producer. And he was very experimental-minded. He was looking for new sounds. He was looking for musicians that enabled him to create those sounds in the studio. So, like, we needed someone who had the technical knowledge of how to use a recording studio. I didn't have any experience. I watched Connie work and picked up the little I know from watching Connie. But this was a team. He was not a composer of our music. He was a co-producer. We always considered ourselves a team. So his thoughts, his input was vital. And also what I think is important to know, I haven't really worked with producers, but from what I hear, there are many producers around that come with the idea, okay, I have to push this artist into this direction, or I have to make this thing more popular. Connie was not like that. He was modest, a modest person. He respected the musicians. And he once did an interview for a German music magazine where he was asked to describe his role in the production process. And he said, I'm a midwife. I present the musician with conditions in which he can deliver his baby or her baby. And I think that comes very close to the truth. He listened to our sketches. We sometimes didn't have much to present, but laying down maybe the basic tracks of Hallo Gallo or other tracks, he synced, is that how you say, synced yeah. with us. Yeah. He knew, okay, or he had an idea where we were heading, maybe even before we always knew what we were actually going for. And sometimes he added some magical twists, inspirations. For instance, coming back to Hallo Gallo, I remember being in the recording room playing overdubs on my guitar, and Hallo Gallo, he turned the tape around, so suddenly everything was running backwards. And he knew that I love backwards sounds, and I was so happy, and it was so inspiring. So I played along to the backwards flying guitars and the whole track being backwards, going backwards. And when the tape was then turned right again, you have this mixture of backwards flying and forwards flying guitars. And that was something, a good example of how Connie worked. He listened, he watched, and then also, of course, starting the first organization. I also always try to point out it's nearly impossible nowadays with all the technology that is available to create sophisticated sounds, to make wonderful details in the production. There was nothing in the 60s, early 70s in the studio. There was, I remember clearly, Connie had one two-track machine he used as a delay. So there was no delay, digital delay, not to think of. And then there was a reverb chamber, a reverb plate in the next room. And then he had some compressors. And that was it. And so everything he constructed, the sounds he organized, was the result of his understanding, of course, with our input and also helping him mix, because it was all done manually, no automated mixing, no computer-aided mixing back then. And organizing these ideas into sounds, sound combinations that worked. And that was the result of his amazing talent. So Connie Plunk, he will forever be connected. And I'm forever thankful for all the contributions, right up to my first three solo albums, which... It's not so well known outside of Germany, but they were hugely successful inside the German speaking countries, Germany, Austria, Switzerland. My solo albums, they sold much more than Neu and Harmonia put together. I mean, Harmonia didn't sell at all, so it was easy to sell more than Harmonia. But and that was all thanks to Connie. And thank you for asking about Connie.
So the next question we had for Michael was that there another collaborator that he worked with was Brian Eno, and he related a story about there was a lovely little story that while he was working with Harmonia, Eno was the possessor of a tape that he brought with him. And that went with him, and Rother and Dingen didn't see that tape for quite a while.
Yeah, do you want me to relate that story?
Yeah, it's a great story.
It was very funny. Brian Eno was sitting in a harmonia concert in Hamburg in 1974. We didn't know him, but he was on a promo tour at the time in Germany. And a journalist, one of the two journalists who liked our music in Germany, we were so unpopular, you can't imagine. He said, yeah, well, Harmonia's playing in Hamburg tonight. And Brian said, well, take me there. And so Brian was sitting in that audience in the first row, dressed all in black. And we were fans of Roxy Music and Brian Eno's work. And so we were flattered. And then in the halfway through the concert intermission, he came on stage and we were introduced. And he was so polite, very British, very polite, very pleasant, intelligent person to meet and to talk. And we invited him to visit us in the country place, Forst. And it took him 2 years. I mean, time just goes by. He was busy working on other projects. And in 76, he called us. I think it must have been in the summer when Harmonia had already disbanded, summer 76. And he said, would it be okay if I visited you now? And there were, of course, some struggles in Harmonia after the boys decided to quit the project. I was willing to fight for Harmonia, but I think they gave up hope in 76 after also the second album was a failure, a commercial failure. But then we said, no, we can't turn him down. He's so nice. And yeah, we'll pick you up. Please come and visit us. And so Brian came with a little synthesizer, and we had a wonderful time with him, going for walks, drinking tea, talking about all kinds of things, also some of his theories. But we also, without any actually real intention of recording something for release, it was just, oh, why don't we go into the studio and play around a bit? I had a 4-track machine. Nice coincidence for musicians, 4 tracks. So everyone had 1 track. And sometimes we played around, all 4 of us. Sometimes only 1 of us or 2 of us were with him. Maybe sometimes went cooking while we were recording stuff. I must say we were, because of the commercial failure of the project, we were really poor musicians. So we didn't have a supply of blank tapes. And I don't know whether he expected something like this, but Brian came with a bunch of blank tapes. And so we filled those tapes, and there was no, no bad intention, yeah. I'm sure. After 10 days of being with us, he moved on to record with David Bowie, which was also quite funny because Brian was the first one to tell us that there were musicians listening to our music. We had no idea back then. It's hard to imagine these days with, you know, information access around the world, who's talking about what, who's doing what. Back then, we were on the backside of the moon, sort of. And he said, David and I, we know all your stuff, and Can and Kraftwerk, and we are discussing your music. We were flattered and impressed, surprised, but that was a nice surprise. Anyway, at the end of the 10-day stay, he took the tapes. Luckily, on the evening before he left, I sat down in the studio and did a rough mix of the sketches. We made so many sketches. It's impossible, really. I don't know, 30 or 40 sketches, just throwing ideas around, sometimes a few seconds, sometimes 2-3 minutes. And later, the re-release that was done by Grönland 10 years ago, I think, something like that, that contains three tracks which I only had on my cassette, because Redelius only found one of the big reels in Brian's archive when he visited Brian in the 80s in London. And with his consent, with his permission, he looked, because Brian said, I can't find the tapes there. I don't know, they are gone. And so Redelius luckily found one tape, and that was then released as Tracks and Traces. And for the re-release, which is now currently available, I added three pieces, the first two and the last track on the current edition, Welcome and just now I can't remember the names. Welcome is the first track. It was recently used for some TV, very popular TV series, The Bear.
I haven't seen that one yet.
Anyway, that was the situation with Brian, and it was very nice. Unfortunately, I never met Brian after that, never met him again. So, same with David Bowie. He invited me to join him in 77, and that didn't happen. That's a long story. Maybe you've heard me trying to explain the mystery who turned whom down. No, nobody turned anybody down. Somebody played us in the background. Right. But anyway, he invited me to visit him in New York, and also that didn't happen. Unfortunately, David is no longer around.
That was a very beautiful track called Welcome, and that was by Harmonia with Brian Eno, and that was off their Tracks and Traces album. Finally, we asked Michael Rother what he was working on and whether there was anything new that he was able to tell us.
Well, I just, I already mentioned the Harmonia project. Vittoria and I recorded two tracks for that. So maybe I shouldn't say too much about it. It's fine. And that was, again, also a very inspiring process. She has such a lovely voice. One is with vocals. And I don't know, I feel like someone walking along the beach looking for shells or just finding something. That's more or less my general attitude. I don't have a project like I need to record something, or I need to work with these people, or I have to do this. Am I still?
It's organic. It's organic.
Yeah. And whenever there's time and there's occasion in the studio to work, there's so much more I would like to do, and Vittoria also would like to do with music, then there is time.
Yeah.
I guess it's a luxury problem, maybe, but it's a limitation, really, and it's freedom. I feel very free. I can decide to work on whatever project I want, and preparing now the concerts in January. We're playing in Istanbul, February, London, then the Australia tour, and talking about Sweden and America also. So tours are always exciting, special events to look forward and to work towards, and trying to find time in between to develop new ideas, to work on new methods of creating music, and it's just enjoying the time, hearing sounds and being able to play with these colors. It's a privilege.
Well, it's certainly been a privilege for us to talk to you, Michael. And once again, thank you so very much for your time. And we greatly look forward to welcoming you to Perth in February. And we just wish you every success in the future. And hope that palette of yours gets better and more colourful as you go along.
Very, very kind of you. Thank you very much for your questions. And I hope we'll meet. Maybe we have a chance to say hello.